Father, I want to say, I feel been so good to me. Oh, you've been better to me than I've been to my own self. Yeah. And every time I think about you, girl, yeah. Every time I think about you, baby, yeah. I gotta get myself ready.
Yeah.
I gotta get myself ready.
Yeah.
I gotta get myself ready.
Yeah.
I gotta get myself ready.
Yeah.
Are you ready, Rudolph?
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready, Ernie?
Yeah.
Are you ready, Marvin?
Yeah.
Are you ready, George?
Yeah.
Are you ready, Skip?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Get ready.
I'm ready.
Here we go. Here we go. Here we go.
Get ready, because here we go. This is the best way to start up a show.
I know, we almost weren't ready.
You know what? It's Friday, it's 5 p.m., time for How Music Changed, the Friday edition of American Hit Radio here at WHBC 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, with my lovely wife, Heidi Morales Ryan, here to help me out. Earl Holder behind the boards, and as you know, we like to focus on one artist at a time on Fridays with How Music Changed. We're back on the contemporary part of our show today. We're going to be discussing the Isley Brothers. So let's pick up exactly where we left off and start at the beginning all at the same time. Here's the Isleys with Shout.
Well, you know you make me wanna shout and kick my heels up and down.
A little bit softer now.
We are all sweated up here in the studio, dancing around. I mean, what a way to start off the show, huh?
We're having a little rave up.
We are going to spend the next hour focusing on the career of the Isley Brothers, one of the most sorely underrated bands, I was going to say, of my generation. It's not just my generation. They have survived and charted for six of the past, every decade for the past six decades. That song we just heard, Shout, debuted in 1959. So we got the 50s covered. They were on the charts in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and they've even been on the charts up until a couple of years ago in the new millennium. They have been with us that long.
Wow.
And for some reason, I just think they seem to be sadly neglected. Let's tell the story through the music as best as we possibly can with the Isleys, as we normally do. Going all the way back to 1954, first of all, the Isley Brothers is a family of six brothers. There were six boys that were growing up together. The original band was a gospel quartet. As you could tell by Shout, their roots were definitely in gospel. And they were singing the gospel type of stuff in the earlier years as a quartet. And before they got famous, the lead singer with Ronald Isley had been killed in an accident. He was on his bike. That's how young they were. He was on his bike, got hit by a car, and that sidetracked the band for a while. In fact, they were ready to quit, but the parents felt that they were too good to let that happen, and maybe they ought to try to get back together and do something as a trio. They were a bit hesitant at first to do it, but they decided that they would do it, but they also decided what they would do is they would maybe do secular music and try to see if they could take a shot at becoming famous. So they came to New York City and did a couple of recordings, actually became a doo-wop band for a while and didn't really have much success with the doo-wop stuff.
That last song you played still had a little bit of doo-wop feel to it.
Well, yeah, it's gospel 100%, but you can hear with the harmony and stuff going on mm-hmm. that they were tight singers and that they worked really well as a harmonic unit, the three of them. It was really only until what had happened was it eventually developed that they were touring with Jackie Wilson and a bunch of other people, and they were doing their own version of, I think it was Lonely Teardrops. And during the song, they would rave it up, and then they would start singing like the line from Shout, some of the lyrics that were in Shout, and the audience would go nuts whenever this happens. I said, you got to make that part of this. You got to make that into a song rather than cover it. Write your own song around the rave up,
right?
And it was that simple. That's what they did, and that's eventually where Shout came from. And the song itself was a little bit too long for a single, so when it was released, it came out as a two-sided single: Shout Parts One and Parts Two, with it fading out and fading back in. We just heard the whole thing. The Isleys did that a lot. We're going to hear a few songs probably in today's show that featured that same thing, where they would have one song and they would put it on both sides of a single. The song Shout itself didn't really sell particularly well when it first came out, but people who heard it were influenced by it. It had a huge effect. It was covered by a lot of English bands covered it. The Beatles even did a rather poor version of it for some of their BBC recordings. In fact, a downright bad version of it, really, especially compared to what the Isleys did. And but again, the story of the Isleys, and I'm going to keep coming back to this.
Yeah, but go fast and keep it short because
you've got a lot of music
to
play.
Cover.
Well, it's such a shame because it seems as if there's, like I said, there's inconsistency. They don't get recognized. And it's probably because they never really were able to follow up a hit immediately with their next hit, especially in the beginning. Time would pass, and they kept changing labels. It would be a few more years now before they actually got to record with a different label and put out their next hit in 1962. There was a track by a band called the Top Notes. I didn't even know this myself, but the song actually goes back pre-Beatles, pre-Isleys to this band called the Top Notes. And the Isleys figured they'd cover it. And it made a lot of sense for two reasons. Number one, the word shout was in the title. Mm. So it references back to their big hit, Shout. And the twist craze was huge around 1962. Chubby Checker just hit with the twist. Mm-hmm. Everybody who had the word twist in their title was entitled to sell some records. So the Isley Brothers just took it and they put their own touch on it and released this track titled, naturally enough, Twist and Shout. Three years of hard work between Shout and Twist and Shout, but it seemed like it was worth it. And the Isley Brothers were obviously in this for the long haul. We sure know that now. Their hard work paid off. Now, this is already, in just a couple of years, they've already been through two record labels, just if I could trace this path for you. The first single, Shout, was on RCA. Mm-hmm. Twist and Shout was released on Scepter and Wand, and it became a number 17 pop hit. And it was even higher on the R&B charts. And then the Beatles, when they re-recorded it, and it was released after they finally hit in America in 64, it became a number two hit for the Beatles in the year 1964. So it was a kind of a weird thing, though, because when the Beatles hit, it upset the music industry so profoundly that most of the people that were having hits before the Beatles ended up getting sidetracked. The Isleys were smart. The same thing was happening to them. Even though it was their own material, the Beatles were going to make it difficult for even the Isleys to make the adjustment to the sudden change of what was going to be happening in light of Beatlemania. So they had to do some adjusting of their own. The first thing that meant was, well, let's start our own record label. They were unhappy with the way that the labels were, basically not able to follow up their hits with other hits. So they formed their own record, Teaneck, named after Teaneck, New Jersey, which is where they had relocated to. and they were operating out of Teaneck. And when they were with Teaneck, they also decided that they would try to form, get their own backup band together to become like a totally autonomous unit, just them. And they met a guitar player who they just blew them away, totally blew them away. The guy's name was, well, he was calling himself Jimmy James. And he just said, I got my guitar player in Hawk. You got to help me get my guitar out, and I'll show you how good I am, and maybe you'll hire me. So they take him to the pawn shop to get his guitar out. No strings on the guitar. Doesn't even have strings on it.
Oh, my
It's
goodness.
Just a piece of wood, basically, with some pickups in it. Of course, they go out. They buy the strings for him, and he comes in. They said within 60 seconds of this guy playing with them, he got the job. He became their guitar player. You know who this guy was? Jimi Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix just got his first,
I had a feeling.
His first professional job as the lead guitar player for the Isley Brothers. It's really strange that they didn't have any huge hits with Jimmy, but they had some really interesting recordings. And since they're a vocal band, it's not really so much about the guitar. So you don't hear what you would later hear with Jimi Hendrix's solo career, of course. Mm-hmm. But I think you'll know on this track who the guitar player is. I pulled this one out in particular because you can kind of tell that it's Jimmy. This track, again, by the Isley Brothers with Jimi Hendrix on guitar, at the time known as Jimmy James, is called Move Over and Let Me Dance.
I know you like to dance, oh, but I give somebody else a chance. I'd like to express myself. Get back, you're ruining my health. If you don't move over, then I can't dance. I wanna show you what it's all about now. Oh, but you gotta get back. Are you on the wrong track? You gotta learn how to relax.
Now, why do we not know that song better than we do? To me, that is just such a stunning piece of work. First of all, let's talk about the date. Recorded in late 1964, it came out in 1965. The Beatles, who were way, way, way ahead of their time in terms of like the pop charts, had just released Help. In fact, after this, the Beatles released Help. This track sounds like it dates from it sounds like it would be after Sgt. Pepper,
right?
Or something. It's pure funk. Psychedelic. And here, and that didn't even exist. That wasn't a genre in 1965. It didn't even exist.
Yeah, it was way ahead of its time.
So these guys are pushing all sorts of boundaries. And they're also obviously very restless because I guess releasing this stuff on their own label, they're realizing that's probably why it wasn't hitting. Nobody was telling them what to do, though, for a change. And you hear what they were coming up with, and they were like totally independent. Just stuff like this. It's phenomenal. Now, it's great, but they can't market it on their own label, apparently. They're just not getting it out there, and they're getting frustrated. Once again, they're frustrated. So this time they decide that they're going to fold the label and go to yet another label. This time they got an offer from Motown. Now, in 1965, Motown was the biggest thing going in America. You couldn't get a more active label. Probably 7 or 8 of the most popular bands in the country were all from the Motown label. So it could only help the Isleys, they figured, to team up with such a winning organization. So they did. And the songwriting team of Holland Dozier Holland was called in to start writing songs for them. And the first thing that happened there is the red light went on in their heads, like, wait a minute, we write our own songs. And not at Motown, no. Motown is a factory. And you got songwriters, you got producers, and you got bands that sing. And the way that they worked it, that's the way that they wanted to keep it. So the Isleys weren't too sure that they were going to be comfortable with it.
They didn't know what they were getting signed up for.
Yeah, they figured, so this is the way it operates, huh? So there was a couple of red flags from the get-go, but when they had the results that they had with their first single, they began to say, well, maybe we could take this. This isn't so bad. It was a number 12 hit for them on the Billboard Hot 100. It was their biggest hit yet that came along. And actually, I believe this charted in 1966 on Motown Records. Here's the Isleys again with yet another style change. This track is called This Old Heart of Mine. There it is, This Old Heart of Mine by the Isley Brothers. That was taken from their Motown tenure. Here we are just basically 4 or 5 songs into the show, and it sounds like it's 4 different bands.
It's incredible.
You can tell it's the Isleys, but each track, the production, I mean, the difference in the production of that track compared to the track before it by Jimi Hendrix is just stunning. I want to remind you that you're listening to American Hit Radio. That's the name of the show. On WHPC 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, with Heidi Morales Ryan, engineer Earl Holder, helping us out, holding the board down for me. Thank you very much. And on Fridays, we do a segment of our show, actually the entire show on Friday. We call it How Music Changed, where we pick some of the most influential artists of this century and focus an entire show, sometimes more than one, if they warranted or if there's just so much to cover. The Isleys very much do, but it's kind of great to cram it into one show because I think it's just like a wham, bam, hit you over the head with it sort of a thing. And I think it makes the point that much tighter. And that's why I'm kind of enjoying doing this.
The Isleys were very stylish mofros.
Oh, these guys were quite the dressers. Throughout each decade, they kept changing their style, not only musically, but the way that they looked. And by the time we get to the latter day periods, like in the 70s and the 80s, oh man, look out. These guys were practically wearing day glow clothes and robes and fur. It was fabulous.
Well, they're even that cover photo right there, they're trimmed in furs.
Yeah,
ermine and fur.
They're something else. Well, I want to play one more track before the Motown era ends, and this is a song that never even charted. It just goes to show you how much stuff actually even fell by the wayside. This is a song that didn't even touch the singles chart, but you might recognize it as it was covered by many other artists since the Isleys recorded this for Motown. This track, in its original incarnation by the Isley Brothers, is called Take Me in Your Arms, Rock Me a Little While. Another like unsung classic by the Isley Brothers.
I love the energy in their songs, and I love the sexuality.
Yeah, there's a lot of sexuality in all their songs, and it gets crazier. In fact, that's where we're going right now, because the Isleys were kind of like hung up with what was happening at Motown. They're an independent bunch of guys. I think this had a lot to do with why they never really quite caught on as much as they really should have. Just the fact that they were very much concerned about their own independence and retaining their own independence, number one. And number two, of course, all of these label changes. With so many label changes, nobody could really do any. There was nothing cohesive about what was happening, so it was hard to understand.
I guess they had an idea of what they were expecting and wanted, though. A very strong idea, and it wasn't being realized.
But the thing about it, with all of that working against them, the one thing was that how that ability to change worked in their favor ultimately, because that's why they had longevity. Because now as we leave the 60s, yet another very significant style change takes place. Now in the heart of, with the introduction of album tracks and everything else, the Isleys become a funk band. They start bringing in their younger brothers, the original three members of the Isleys start bringing in some of their younger brothers to play instruments on the tracks.
Band got so big.
Well, you know, Jimi was out, of course, already. Jimi Hendrix. In fact, at this point, Jimi is alive and famous.
He's
doing
Woodstock?
His own thing. Probably, exactly, at Woodstock around the time that this track hit. The Isley Brothers in the, let's see, the year is 1969. Reinvented yet again. The name of this track, It's Your Thing. Everything that came before it, it's sounds almost funny to say it, but that track is the song that really marked the arrival of the Isleys in a national way, in a real national, even beyond, like, say, the Motown track. It was the first track of theirs to go to the top 10. For example, it was a number two hit, and it was their biggest hit by far of their career. It actually was their first, their only Grammy Award-winning song.
Wow.
It won a Grammy for Best R&B Vocal Performance by a Duo or Group. Eventually sold 5 million copies of that track. And they stuck with this formula. It was working great for them. And what they did, the other thing that they did was very cool, is they sort of reversed the trend around this time. After years and years and years of black artists writing songs and then having them covered by white artists, and then the white artists would have a bigger hit with it.
Right.
The Isleys kind of decided to go to that well and reverse it. They started recording songs like Summer Wind by Seals and Croft and Love the One You're With by Stephen Stills. Don't Let Me Be Lonely Tonight by James Taylor. These things that are just real, you know, very much, you know, part of white culture, and turning them into these funk classics and doing these great versions of those songs. And they all became big R&B hits, but the song that really kept them alive again, I'd say, it was also when they were on Buddha Records, their fifth label, by this time, was this track when they had brought Ernie in to play guitar, and Ernie was obviously paying attention when he was probably only about 7 or 8 years old, when Jimi Hendrix was playing with the band,
right.
he was listening. Because this track has got Ernie doing a pretty darn good. Jimmy's gone at this point. Jimmy passed away at this point, I would suppose. I think Jimmy died in, 1970? Yeah. This track was released in 1973. So a lot of time had passed. Ernie had a little chance to catch up. Here's the Isleys. It was another one of those two-parters. We'll play as much of it as we can. It was a track that they originally recorded in 1964 called Who's That Lady? Didn't go anywhere with that title, so they re-released it as The Jam, this time simply calling it That Lady. It's almost impossible
you
to imagine.
You can't fade that down.
No, I could not fade that out. I was thinking maybe I could edit that, but that was just, you got to let that guitar go.
It's too good.
Now, see, this here features all five of the surviving Isley brothers in the band now. Well, five of them, plus actually a brother-in-law, Chris Jasper, who was actually, his sister was married to, I think, Marvin? Well, anyway, one of the other brothers was married, so it's like, actually, there were six of the Isleys, well, five Isleys and Jasper in the band at the same time.
Well, thank goodness they married some talent, got married into the, more talent. I don't mean to imply that there wasn't talent.
Just even more. I was just saying, where you're going to get in that band, because there's so much talent that's overflowing. It's just coming out of their ears, certainly coming out of their mouths. And it's hard to believe that it's the same band that we started with. I mean, each track, the change. And yet again, not only another style change again and another label change.
It's the secret to longevity and success, though.
Restless.
Look at David Bowie, too. I mean, he's one person that's constantly.
Well, Isleys have set the record. I think there's no band that has had a hit on the top, top 40 hit or a charting single anyway for each of six decades. It hasn't happened for anybody else except the Isleys. Now, the contract with Buddha expired in 73. Now, at this point, now they're on Epic Records. And I guess at this point now, not only are they doing this funky stuff, but they decided maybe a little bit of political type style music was beginning to come into play. Mm-hmm. They handled that brilliantly as well. It was another one of those two-part hits. This one, again, became a top 10 hit for them. This one entitled Fight the Power. It became, again, a top 10 hit for the Isleys. It was a number 4 hit. Now, imagine radio stations around the country going crazy with this song, because the Isleys actually used the word, the BS word in the chorus. And people, I'm sure it got played a lot of times by a lot of people, trying to deal with what you got to do with it. Like, even we just, you get caught sometimes with that sort of thing. But, I mean, what a great song, again, and it just shows how these guys are cutting edge. Just always. And again, it was just a great funk line, what they were about. But guess what? yet another style change.
It wasn't in there.
Around, I'd say it was the early 80s, there was a whole movement going on black radio. I think, I didn't even find out about it. I was a little late coming to it, but I think they called it Quiet Storm. It was like a Smokey Robinson thing, all about love songs, about, you know, turning down the lights and mellow. Music for making love. You know, just really good, you know, quiet
slow
soul.
Slow jams.
Slow jams. Before it was even slow jams, it was really Quiet Storm. And the Isleys were the king of it. They were about as good as anybody.
Freaky.
You know, them, and of course, they were, right, exactly. Where Smokey Robinson was very polite and just, you know, beautiful and romantic, the Isleys just got sexy. And it was obvious. And in fact, the song title says it all. The Isleys, kings of Quiet Storm. Name of this track is Between the Sheets.
Love surrounding me. Ooh, 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 ooh.
you know, I'm thinking maybe what I ought to do is stop and buy a bottle of wine on the way home, and maybe I'll play this track again later tonight.
Who knows? Who knows? You might get lucky.
Right? Oh, that's a good idea. Man.
I love to make you blush.
You know, people who like... It's funny. People like fans of contemporary music and rap might recognize that track because, it, as Earl's pointed out, it's been sampled by so many people. The Isleys are sampled all over the place. But that track was a huge hit for like for Biggie, Biggie Smalls, Notorious B.I.G. on Big Papa. Another track, Ice Cube, grabbed the track from them too. He had that big hit, It Was a Good Day. That was also sampling of an Isleys track, a track called At Your Best. And the Isleys were supplying a lot of material for a lot of different people around this time. Unfortunately for them, most of the good news was happening third party, though, because things began to get pretty weird. First of all, there was yet another label change, this time Warner Brothers. And I think they touched every label that there was at this point, except for Columbia, probably. And that happened because the younger brothers were having a falling out with the older brothers. And they decided, and they broke up. They went two separate ways. The younger brothers formed a band called Isley Jasper Isley, and the original three older brothers tried to carry on, but that ended real quick when Kelly died of a heart attack, cancer-related heart attack, almost immediately afterward.
Oh dear!
So that left them as a duo, and then soon after that, Rudolph said, "You know what? You know, our younger brother died in the beginning. We lost our father before this whole thing even started, and now we lost Kelly. I'm going to join the ministry." So Rudolph decided to pull out and became
a minister,
which left Ronald on his own. And next thing you know, that happened. The Isley Jasper Isley group of the three younger members split up, and they all became solo members. So by the year 1989. All of the Isleys were solo artists, completely.
Incredible.
There was no longer an Isley Brothers group at all. And then little by little, I think that they realized that, you know, Ronald was just kind of like out there on his own, and it became...
They started coming back to the fold, as it were.
Seemed like, right, a good idea that they could begin to come back. And something else happened around this time, which is fairly interesting. In the mid-90s, R. Kelly became a superstar on his own, and he was a big fan of the Isley Brothers, so he contacted Ronald. And they began to come back together. Ernie was a part of the group again at this point. And they came together. And R. Kelly, being the superstar that he was at the time, I think it might have been his third album, was releasing that album of his just called R. Kelly. It was one of the biggest albums of the year. An absolutely huge seller. And one of the best songs on it happened to feature Ronnie Isley. Oh. And, you know, as a background vocalist. And it's weird because it was a video for the track. And everybody who like was into R. Kelly knew the video. And they'd see this character. There was this like thuggish gangster type character in the video called Mr. Biggs. Turns out that Mr. Biggs was Ronnie Isley.
Oh, wow.
So it gave him this whole alter ego thing that was going on that was now relevant to contemporary R&B that also tied him in with the rap contingent on the outside of it anyway through R. Kelly, strangely enough. And next thing you know, here is Ronnie Isley, the same guy that sang Shout in the beginning of our program, singing teamed up with R. Kelly in the 90s. Let's play some of that track from R. Kelly's album. It's an R. Kelly track. It's called Down Low. Nobody Has to Know.
Nobody has to know.
You know, time just flies when you're having fun, and I just want to get in one more track before we go. But I just want to point out, I mean, Ronnie said something that I think sums it up really well. This is like to summarize their career. We influenced the Beatles. We had hits from Motown. Jimi Hendrix was in our band before Monterey Pop. We had hits during the funk and disco years. Rappers sample us. You can hear our music in the movies, in stadiums, and on commercials. Who else has that kind of a resume? And he's right. This is taken from their last album, an album that debuted at number one in 2003. That's how hot these guys still are. This hit is taken from that album. It's, again, of course, by the Isleys, as they are now. The track is called What Would You Do? We're going to end with this track. Folks, I want to thank you so much for listening, though. I wish I had more time to spend with you and with the Isley Brothers, but we will be back, of course, next Tuesday at 5, and we'll be back for more of How Music Changed Friday at 5 o'clock. Heidi, thank you so much. Earl, thank you for your great work, and we'll see you on Tuesday and Friday. Thanks for listening, folks. Take care.
Hello, ladies. How are y'all doing tonight? Can I keep it real and say what's on my mind? There you are in that chair waiting for me to take you back, to break it down and sing to you and make you feel these words are true.
By
who's gonna be the lucky one?
By hands.
Who wants me to spend some money on them and have some fun? Tell me,
I choose you.
What would you do?
What would you do if I said all of these words were true?
What would you?
What would you do if I came down here and said,
what would you do?
What would you do if I told the band to break it down?
Oh.
What would you do if I said I wanna leave you?